Hello everyone, welcome to This Week in Stupid for the 19th of October 2014. This week is brought to you by Arthur Chu and his profound lack of self-awareness for starting the hashtag TweetLikeNotYourShield. Not only is he actually dismissing women's lived experiences, he does also agree that feminists have a penchant for making up the definitions of words. So this week, the world at large decided to start as it means to go on, to do something so phenomenally stupid that it's probably damaging to children. The Marxists are really calling the shots, aren't they? Don't address them as boys and girls, call them purple penguins. Nebraska school district issues politically correct advice to teachers to make them gender inclusive. At what point as human beings do we decide that these people have gone too fucking far? But it does go on to say, the instructional handout for teachers was passed around as Lincoln Public School administrators were trying to sensitively address transgender issues. Because if there's one issue that kids need addressing, it's transgenderism. I mean, they don't care where the crayons are. They're not interested in going to bed a bit later. They're interested in knowing what it's like to be a different gender. The instructional handout, entitled 12 Easy Steps on the Way to Gender Inclusiveness, listed step 2 as, don't use phrases such as boys and girls, you guys, ladies and gentlemen, and similarly gendered expressions to get kids' attention. Well, I often address children as ladies and gentlemen, but I do have a question. Transgender men and transgender women, what gender are you? Because it sounds like you've gone from male to female or female to male, which would still mean you would surely want to be the gender you were aiming for with the surgery. Am I correct or not? Because if I am correct, saying boys and girls, you guys, which is gender neutral anyway, really, ladies and gentlemen and whatnot, which would be no problem at all. But instead, they recommend we say things like, calling all readers, or hey campers, or could all of the athletes come here? You know, dehumanizing phrases that reduce people to their function and nothing else. The gender ideologues love this kind of thinking because it really helps advance their cause. But I'm really against it because it makes it really easy for brainwashed morons to push people into gas chambers. They go on to say that one parent in the district worries that the training pushes an agenda, calling the change social engineering. That's because it is. It's this social Marxism that's coming from academia that they're pushing on kids. I can't tell you how disgusting I find this. It is surely easy enough to spot which children are transgender. And if it's really not, can you not just have a sign up in a common room or in the changing rooms or something that says, if you're not sure if you're a boy or a girl, contact the counsellor and they'll talk to you about it. The agenda we're promoting is to help all kids succeed, said Brenda Legardio, the LPS coordinator of social workers and counsellors. We have kids who come to us with a whole variety of circumstances, and we need to equitably serve all kids. You're not equitably serving kids who you are pulling down to this level. There is no need for any of this social Marxism to occur. All that is needed to occur is the people who need the help should be given it. It's really not that hard, and it's really nothing that anyone is standing against. It goes on to say that the rates of suicide attempts for transgender individuals are reported at 10 times that of the general population. So I agree, there is a problem. But tackling it in the way that they are attempting to is destructive for society. This is madness. This is naked madness. Don't call young children boys or girls, call them purple penguins. Seriously, this is fucking insane. And the insane bullshit doesn't even stop there. 5-year-old girl made to sign school suicide and homicide contract after pointing crayon gun at a classmate. Even putting aside the fact that this school probably doesn't have the legal authority to enforce such a contract on a child, I've got to be honest, I'm actually not sure asking kids to sign a contract not to murder people is going to prevent any murders, let alone their own suicides. A 5-year-old girl in Alabama was made to sign a school contract saying she would not kill herself or anyone else after she pointed a crayon at another pupil, it has been reported, presumably by someone with a severe mental handicap. The girl's mother claims staff at E.R. Dickinson Elementary School in Mobile, Alabama, gave her daughter a questionnaire on suicidal thoughts following an incident in class, even though no normal, rational person would consider this any kind of incident at all. This shouldn't even be a kerfuffle. Rebecca said that the school said her daughter drew an object which resembled a gun She said, according to them, she pointed a crayon at another student when said, pew pew. Holy shit, I can't believe a SWAT team wasn't called. She said her daughter was asked by the school whether she was depressed and given a Mobile County Public School safety contract sign, which stated she would not kill herself or anyone else. Good. What kind of nonsense is this? Why have these words made it to print onto a site that consider itself to be reporting the news? Thank God that state laws in Alabama mean minors can't sign contracts. Rebecca said, there should be a different way to handle this situation. If this is protocol, it needs to be looked at again. Absolutely. What should have happened is, excuse me, child, sit down, come on, be quiet. Turn your book to page 7. She said that the school's request that her daughter see a psychiatrist was also unnecessary. And I'd like to add, fucking mental on the part of the school. Honestly, what kind of teacher is looking at a young girl who's pointing a crayon at some kid, going pew pew pew, thinks, maybe I should contact the psychiatrist. That girl looks like she's either going to commit suicide or go on a mass shooting. Maybe we should get her to sign a contract to make sure she doesn't. I'm just frankly glad that the American government spent $500,000 to study why obese girls have a hard time getting dates. Because, frankly, that's a lot less disappointing. Yeah, they are actually spending $500,000 to find out why obese teenage girls have got a hard time getting dates. Seriously, the National Institute of Health awarded just under $500,000 as a grant last week for the study, which will examine whether social skills have an impact on why obese girls have fewer dating experiences than their less obese counterparts. I'm serious, you guys. Mounting evidence demonstrates that weight influences intimate relationship formation and sexual negotiations among adolescent girls, the grant's abstract states. Obese girls consistently reported having fewer dating and sexual experiences, but more sexual risk behaviors once they are sexually active. I don't know what to tell you, it's like this study was written by a fucking alien or something. One of the insects from Starship Troopers or something is just looking at human beings going, I don't know, this one seems to have more mass and therefore should be objectively better than the other one, which literally hasn't accumulated nearly as much mass. How terribly inefficient. How on earth is this skinny one going to survive in a fucking cocoon? The conceptual framework that has guided this research presumes that differences in social skills for relating to peers and intimate partners, along with differences in the relationship experiences of obese and non-obese girls, account for these differences, it says. However, no studies have actually examined whether the interpersonal skills and intimate relationships of obese and non-obese girls differ. Holy shit, this is stupid. This is just so goddamned retarded. Why are they taking boys out of this equation? They assume that it's nothing to do with the fact that obese girls are, frankly, a lot less attractive than slim girls on average. No. It's because of the social skills of the obese girls. If only they could somehow persuade these young boys into bed with good manners and polite conversation. I'm sorry, social Marxists, but that's not how attraction works. You fucking lunatics. Did I say social Marxists? Because I'm not joking. Professors at the McGee Women's Research Institute and Foundation in Pittsburgh will try and answer this question over the next 4 years, because I don't know, they might otherwise have to get a real job. The study will specifically look at whether overweight teen girls develop relationship skills later in life and will compare their trajectories of romantic and sexual relationship characteristics with others. The research will also contrast obese and non-obese African-American and white adolescent girls. Why wouldn't it? These people are a giant bunch of fucking racists. The grant called the project innovative, which is wonderful. Just like at one point, gulags were an innovation. Big gains for equality this week, though, because it's been discovered that the stress of a career is harming women's health. The life expectancy gap between the sexes is narrowing rapidly. The cultural Marxists must be thrilled. Increasing numbers of women have joined the labour market over 50 years, much to the joy of corporations around the globe. Look, ladies, the point of technological advancements is so you have to do less work. How is it that we're at the most advanced point in all of human history, and more women need to work than ever before? This is crazy, and it is damaging your health. In 1963, men were twice as likely to die early as women. Last year, however, the increased risk fell to 1.5 times, and the life expectancy gap has fallen from 6 years to fewer than 4. Well, I'm frankly just glad they didn't say less than 4. The ONS study is the first official recognition that women who have abandoned the domestic lives of their grandmothers now face the same shorter lifespans of men. I will try and contain my surprise. Ministers want women to work long hours when they have children, but these figures indicate that there may be public health problems as a result, said Laura Perrins of the pressure group Mothers at Home Matter. Pressure group? Do you not mean advocacy group? And I think mothers at home do matter, frankly. It really, really seems that we're having a lot of social problems due to mothers not being in the home. But there's clearly now a health interest in providing transferable tax allowances that would make it possible for people to stay at home with young children. Higher premature death rates for women are the most marked in the 55 to 69 age group, the paper found. Research done by the ONS 2 years ago found for the first time since the Victorian era that mortality rates were not improving among some groups of working women. They cited the intermediate group that includes saleswomen, counter clerks, clerical workers in the public sector, and medical and dental technicians. Women have always enjoyed greater life expectancy. I guess it turns out that all that patriarchal oppression was actually good for women. I don't know. I don't make up the results. But you know what? I completely support a woman's right to choose. Let them choose to work all their lives if they want. I'm personally going to try and choose not to do that. So you know what, rich working women? If you want to do that, I will probably end up marrying you. As long as you're okay with me loafing around the house and playing on my computer all day. Obviously, I'll raise our kids and keep the house tidy, and there will even be a meal on the table for you when you get home, because I too will plan on eating that evening. Some analysis link higher stress levels in working women with the sharp rise in numbers of who go to work while they have young families. Yes, I imagine that working and maintaining a young family is quite stressful. Official figures this year showed that the number of stay-at-home mothers has dropped just over 2 million, down from 3 million 20 years ago. And if the corporatocracy has its way, it will be 0 million. Seriously, do you want to waste your lives working for these companies when you could be at home with your kids? I'm just saying, I know what I would rather choose. However, government policies that have put pressure on women to work, whether they want to or not, may not have entirely been a good thing. No. Let's not say this in newspeak. Let's say this in real human terms. They have been a bad thing. Letting feminists demonise young women with the desire to be a mother rather than the man of the house was really not a good thing and never was going to be a good thing. We may be looking at the unintended consequences of the economic pressure on women to go out to work throughout their lives. No shit, Sherlock. Life is hard work. Any fool could have fucking told you so. But, you know, they're not that stupid. It's just an unfortunate side effect of allowing persuasive idiots to be persuasive. The sort of idiots that say, I'm a feminist and I converted to Islam. That's right up there with saying that gender signifiers are a tool of the patriarchy and then wearing hoop earrings and red lipstick in those very same YouTube videos. After questioning everything I was taught to be true and digging through rhetoric, history and dogma, presumably this person took critical theory at university, I found out about this thing called Islam. I learned that Islam is neither a culture nor a cult. It's actually both of those things. So let's keep splitting hairs here, shall we? But I suppose it is technically true. I came to realise that Islam is a world religion that teaches tolerance, justice and honour and promotes patience, modesty and balance. Which again is true. Any religion can be used in exactly the same way. And like any other religion, Islam can be used for destructive purposes. This is the nature of religions. This is actually what they're fucking designed for. As I studied the faith, I was surprised many of the tenets resonated with me. I imagine it's probably because this person used to be a Christian. I was pleased to find that Islam teaches its adherents to honour all prophets, from Moses to Jesus to Muhammad, all of whom taught mankind to worship one God and conduct ourselves with higher purpose. Fair enough. I was drawn to Islam's appeal to intellect and heartened by the Prophet Muhammad's quote, "The acquisition of knowledge is compulsory for every Muslim, whether male or female." That was indeed very progressive for the time. It doesn't surprise me in the least that you could have feminist Islam. They're both ideologies and religions, and the extremists within them work in very much the same way. I'm as guilty as anyone for not taking the time to separate feminist extremists from the normal feminists, who are probably very reasonable people. And the same can be said for Islam and Muslims by wider society in the West. So is it any wonder, with feminism actually on the defensive these days, they're looking towards finding new allies? Pat Condell is actually an excellent example of a person who is compelled to criticise both groups for broadly the same reason. These days, I'm a proud wearer of a hijab. You can call it a scarf. My scarf does not tie my hands behind my back, and it is not a tool of oppression. Unlike those fucking toy aisles in Toys R Us. It doesn't prevent my thoughts from entering my head and leaving my mouth, but I didn't always know this. Studying Islam didn't dispel all my cultural misconceptions. I had been raised on imagery of women in the Middle East being treated like chattel by men, who forced them to cover their bodies out of shame or a sense of ownership. But when I asked a Muslim woman, "Why do you wear that?" her answer was obvious and appealing. To please God. To be recognized as a woman who is to be respected and not harassed. So that I can protect myself from the male gaze. Be warned, feminists. This is cultural appropriation that you're engaging in. But it is also fucking hilarious. You do need to protect yourselves from the male gaze. They can really just twist anything around in their own heads. She explained how dressing modestly is a symbol to the world that a woman's body was not meant for mass consumption or critique. That's why, get your fucking burkas on. I still wasn't convinced and replied, "Yeah, but women are like second-class citizens in your faith." The very patient Muslim lady explained that, no, you're talking shit, and that during a time when the Western world treated women like property, which in English-speaking nations is probably some point before they discovered writing, Islam taught that men and women were equal in the eyes of God. Islam made the woman's consent to marriage mandatory, and gave women the opportunity to inherit, own property, run businesses, and participate in government. Only about 700 years after British women had been doing the same. It was very progressive for Dark Ages Arabia. It really was. It might shock you to learn that I had an arranged marriage. Honestly, at this point with feminists, nothing shocks me. No, seriously, I honestly can't believe that a feminist converted to Islam had an arranged marriage and considered that empowering, right after putting on her burqa to protect herself from the male gaze. Honestly, none of this shit shocks me anymore. That doesn't mean I was forced to marry my father's first choice suitor, like Jasmine from Aladdin. Dad didn't even have a say. I see. So feminists have redefined the phrase arranged marriage, have they? When I converted, it wasn't a good time to be a Muslim. Feeling isolated, alienated and rejected by my own society pushed me to want to start a family of my own. That's right, it takes feminism to remove that desire and it takes Islam to bring it back. Honestly, these people are just, they were born to be ideologues. They needed some ideology to follow. They can't think for themselves. But even before converting, I'd always wanted a serious relationship, but found few men looking for the same. I can't imagine why they weren't attracted to you when you were just a normal feminist. As a new Muslim, I knew there was a better way to look for love and a lifelong partnership. I decided that if I wanted a serious relationship, it was time to get serious about finding one. I wanted an arranged marriage. Alright. So she says, I made a list of 30 rock style deal breakers. I searched, I interviewed, I interrogated friends and families of prospects. I decided I wanted to marry another convert, someone who had been where I was and wanted to go where I wanted to go. Thanks to the parents of friends, I found my now husband, a convert to Islam, in Mobile, Alabama, 2 hours from my New Orleans home. Wait a minute. That's the same place that they made the fucking 5-year-old girl sign the contract that she wouldn't commit any murders! Good God. Get your shit together, Mobile, Alabama. This guy married some crazy who's redefined arranged marriage to mean a marriage I will personally fucking arrange. Not every Muslim finds a mate in this manner. No, some of them don't have a choice. And I didn't always see this for my life, but I'm glad Islam afforded me this option. Well, I'm absolutely shocked by the complete levels of doublethink present in this. But on the plus side, I think we've actually found how the West is going to eventually defeat Islam. Sorry guys, you might have thought you were going to spread Islam over here, Abu Hamza, but you didn't realise how infected we were. The feminist cause takes another blow, because Halle Berry has decided she's an MRA. She wants child support slashed, claims X is living off it, of all things. The Oscar-winning actress wants Gabrielle Aubrey to get a job and stop using the system. I know, Halle, how awful that is. According to TMZ, Berry pays Aubrey $16,000 a month for their daughter, Nala, even though they have joint custody. Ouch. I bet there are so many MGTOW guys watching this going, "Oh, I totally feel for Halle Berry." Berry recently filed court documents asking a judge to reduce the monthly payment to $3,000, saying that Aubrey isn't working and is comfortable living off child support. But to be fair, Halle, you're probably a multi-millionaire, so fucking pay up. This is another real stride for equality. According to the report, Berry feels that Aubrey shouldn't have any problem finding a job and is abusing the system. No, he's doing exactly what the system was designed to do, to siphon money from the incredibly well-earning person to the very poor person in some kind of interpersonal Ponzi scheme. The only problem is that you're earning a lot more than him. I think you've discovered the fate of every successful man. She's been paying him 16 grand a month since June, when a Los Angeles judge also signed off on the custody dispute of the six-year-old. In addition to the monthly payment, Berry was also required to pay a retroactive amount of $115,000 and $300,000 in Aubrey's attorney fees. Ouch! Yeah, I kind of agree, those laws probably do need changing. You'd have thought she'd have had the decency to warn George Clooney about this. For some fucking reason, George Clooney has decided to get married. I have no idea why. Of all of the men on earth who could actually make the not getting married thing work in every conceivable way, is George Clooney not that man? But it doesn't matter because apparently his wife has chosen patriarchy. It came as a surprise in our apparently post-feminist world to hear that human rights lawyer Amal Alamuddin has adopted her husband's surname upon marriage. Yeah, I'm shocked that anyone got married. Fuck the surname. George Clooney got married for some fucking reason. The title referred to the many nameless feminists who are allegedly losing their minds over the decision by Mr. Amal, forthwith to be known as Mrs. Clooney. Nothing fires up feminists more, wrote columnist Eleanor Robertson, than whether or not women take their husband's name upon marriage. But it doesn't bother them if they convert to Islam and go through an arranged marriage and wear a hijab. This mentaloid gets on a hamster wheel and runs and runs and runs until somehow taking your husband's name is no longer patriarchal to feminists and is actually something empowering. But she goes on to say that this once deeply sexist tradition has been retained into the 21st century and transformed into an expression of love and romance, but that doesn't make it right. Love and romance are quite capable of flourishing with an egalitarian marriage or even in a feminist marriage. And feminists, even those who don't keep their own names, are quite capable of inspiring devotion in men and of exuding femininity. Oh yeah, men are famous for wanting to date feminists. Yet, implicit in the renaming of women upon marriage is this coda. So doing, I have demonstrated my love and commitment, as only a female can do, to my husband and to the children we might one day have, by making myself his property. I know how bad a joke that was, but that is literally what the feminists have been saying. Words can mean anything they fucking want. On a deeply personal level, it's not really any of our business whether Amal Clooney or anyone else changes her name. Women, after all, should be free to make their own choices. Well, I agree. Why are you talking about it in a newspaper? But it's important to consider, in the broader socio-political context, under the circumstances which such choices are made, and to examine how they are defended by the women who've made them. Well, we live in a post-feminist society, and she has to defend her choices because feminists are bonkers. But it's probably the men who are to blame, because it's also important to question the role of men in this custom. Many men fiercely cling to the right to retain their own names while expecting that their wives will change theirs. Yeah, men just, they're fiercely clinging to that right. The right. Fucking right. That's No, but anyway. There is still the belief that men own their names, while women borrow their names from their fathers. Yeah, okay, yeah, sure, why not? Let's go full Macintosh with this one. Even though men and women come to the marriage as equals, with a name bestowed usually by their fathers. There is also a strongly held conviction that family unity is achieved through the sharing of a common surname, and that the surname must always come from the husband. This is because boys are socialized to believe their names are indissoluble, while girls are brought up to believe their names are disposable. Yeah, yeah, full Macintosh. No, that's exactly what people think. They say to each other, "Excuse me, your name means nothing. I know it's your father's name, and he thinks that name is indissoluble, but it's a name that means nothing." In truth, every newborn is gifted with a name, whether from their father, mother, or invented. By fucking who? Invented by who? Allah? This is their birthright. Well, that's a wonderful birthright, to just have a name. I mean, I suppose it is, but writing it down as some kind of right that you have, to have your first name or second name, is fucking stupid. It's not that they're a birthright, it's that they're fucking necessary for existence in the modern world. If the name-changing decision is all about choice, it's strange that only women have to make this choice. Well, as you just explained that it comes from historical tradition, no, it's not strange. It's actually exactly what you'd expect. If the reasons women cite for changing their names can be assumed to occur equally across the population, which I'm going to guess the feminists think are listed in order of preference when they say dislike for their former name, no connection to family, or desire to have the same surname as their children, and not at all, I just want to have the same surname as my husband, then surely men would make the same complaints in equal numbers and adopt their wives' names at least as frequently as their wives adopt theirs. Yeah, that's exactly as it is. It's patriarchy. It's not any of those things, it's patriarchy. This antiquated tradition remains an important feminist topic because real problems would be scary and hard to deal with. Because it's a reflection of the society in which we live and the gendered expectations that still course through its veins. Oh, don't worry. Soon we'll all just be purple penguins. It also exposes the choice that women face upon marriage as being not much of a choice at all. For they either rock the boat by opposing convention and keeping their own name, or submit to the broad expectation that it is women who must make all the sacrifices of self for the greater good of the family. I think I can best answer this in the grand tradition of Al Bundy, with a moment of silence for George Clooney.